I'm Denise Crosby, and you're listening to the Mean Joe Grizzly Podcast.
Hey, it's Tom Matthews from Return of the Living Dead and Friday the 13th, Part 6, to name a few. And you're listening to the Mean Joe Grizzly Podcast. Enjoy.
Hey, guys, Tyler Mann here, and you're listening to the Mean Joe Grizzly Podcast.
Hi, I'm John Russo, screenwriter of Night of the Living Dead. Welcome to the Mean Joe Grizzly Podcast. Enjoy.
Let me introduce myself. I'm Joe Grizzly, bitch.
What up, Mean Militia? I'm Mean Joe Grizzly, and when I'm not hosting the devil on my late night talk show, watching Sydney Sweeney become a new saint, or trying to stop an ancient evil from freezing the world over, I'm at the Grizzly Cave, watching movies, reading comics, listening to metal, and of course, crushing beers. And finally, I've seen another good horror movie in 2024. In fact, I've seen two good horror films this past weekend, along with the latest from the Ghostbusters. So needless to say, this has been one of the better weekends for new releases this year. But before we get started, please make sure to follow me on all social media pages, subscribe to the show wherever you listen to podcasts, and subscribe to the YouTube channel by clicking the links in the description below. By doing that, you'll help me continue to talk about all forms of badassery. So let's kick things off with Late Night with the Devil. This is Grizzly Grade Reviews. Desperate to save his show and career, late night show host Jack Delroy decides to have a Halloween special, complete with a kooky psychic, a paranormal skeptic, and a genuine conversation with a demonic possessed little girl who might just be the real deal. So, going into this movie, I was very hyped up because it is getting so much praise, so much buzz. And I was told that this was the best and scariest horror film in the last 10 years, blah, blah, blah. The stuff that you always hear when something's super hyped up. And I found that to be very ridiculous. But I did enjoy this movie a lot. So it stars David Dismalchin. And if you don't know who that is, more than likely you have seen him. He is this great modern character actor that is just on the verge of just breaking through and becoming one of the best actors we've had in a very long time, especially in the horror scene. One of the other great things about this guy is he's one of us. He is a diehard horror movie fan, and it's great to see someone from our community actually get his fair shake and achieve his dreams. And I think this movie was definitely a step in that direction. Again, if you've never heard of Dave Dismalchin, the first time I ever seen him was in The Dark Knight, where he played one of the Arkham escapees, and Harvey Dent was like on the verge of shooting the guy before Batman stopped him. And then probably his next big recognizable role for general audiences was Polka Dot Man in Suicide Squad. So he's been, you know, doing these roles here and there, and he's slowly been gaining momentum. And to my knowledge, this was his first lead role that he's ever gotten. And it's definitely his best performance yet. His emotional range in this movie is impeccable. He goes from hamming it up as the 70s late night host, Johnny Carson type, to having looks of genuine dread and despair and horror on his face, to moments of sadness, to moments of extreme anger. He has it all, and he nails all of it. Just a phenomenal performance. And the rest of the cast all around, they do great as well. And the other particular standout was, I believe her name was Lily. She played the possessed girl. She freaked me the fuck out. Her facial expressions and mannerisms was just too damn creepy. great performances all around. The 70s atmosphere and aesthetic, they completely nailed it. From the camera filter to the dialogue to the culture that they bring in, everything feels like it was ripped straight from the 70s. Just that's what they were going for, and they definitely nailed it. But the behind the scenes feature, because this movie is it's essentially a found footage movie with this 70s lens on it. And when there's commercial breaks on the show, it cuts to black and white, and it has these like behind the scenes like featurette things where it has Jack Delroy and him and his co-workers working together. And the change up between the found footage format to that is done pretty well. It can be a little jarring sometimes at first, but then you see where they're going for and it works. The practical effects, when there is a need for them, they look great. There's not much violence in the movie. It's more of a slow burn storytelling type horror movie instead of a balls to the wall gore fest. But when there is kills and they are practical, they look phenomenal. And they even have like this 70s cheesiness to them that I really like. Because back in the 60s and 70s, the kills were kind of corny, but it adds to the charm of the film, and they also nailed that as well. And the story, overall, it's solid. The motivations and the reasoning behind the entire situation and all the characters' motivations, all of it was very well thought out and very well planned out as the story unfolds throughout the night between what's going on behind the scenes and certain flashbacks and things like that. They do a good job of telling this story. Now, I do got a few issues. Towards the end, there are some scenes where there are some non-practical effects used, some digital effects used, and they look absolutely fucking awful. But I don't know if that was like intentionally by design, but even if it was by design and intentional, it looks like shit. I don't know why it kind of took me out of the movie. They just were so jarring and they just looked so bad. And I really wanted the ending to the film to have more of a punch. Like when you get this big reveal at the end, which you kind of see coming. It's not actually predictable, but you see it eventually. And I wanted it to have a little more of a gut punch. It was still good, but it just felt like it was missing something. I can't really quite put my finger on it, but I wanted a little more out of that ending. And finally, I want to address this movie had a little bit of controversy behind it. And one of the big talking points of this movie is the producers and director and all the crew and everything admitted to using AI for these little cue cards that were like going in between the commercial breaks on the show, like "We'll be right back" or "Happy Halloween." Like they used AI to create those little artwork pieces for the cue cards, and they're very noticeable in some. After hearing this and then thinking back, they're very noticeable. But my real question is. Who gives a shit? I mean, don't get me wrong. I'm not a supporter of AI because I'm of the mind that there have been a few movies that have been written by AI this year, and those movies have been fucking awful. So I'm not all for AI writing or being used so heavily because I do think it takes a job away from somebody, and I do think that it just causes problems in the long run. Because ultimately, AI is not human. So therefore, it cannot create human dialogue properly, and it cannot create artwork that is from the soul and heart of a human. And those little cue cards were a perfect example, just like those shitty scripts that Blumhouse keeps putting out are an obvious issue. And again, I have no proof that Blumhouse used AI to write those scripts. I just know that I don't believe that a human wrote those scripts, especially the dialogue, because it's so inhuman. Human beings do not talk the way that people talk, and I'm not going to get on that rant, but this is kind of the same situation. Is a human wouldn't draw something this imperfect. I mean, yeah, art is subjective, but you could just tell that an AI drew this picture. And AI does this by taking portions of art throughout. Essentially, it steals art off of the internet and stuff like that, and it puts it in this amalgamation, and boom, we have the artwork that you asked it to create for you. So that's the real problem with AI, is it's stolen artwork and it's stealing a job from somebody. So yeah, I'm not a big supporter of that, but I am going to say that doesn't affect this movie, guys. Did it possibly take a job away from somebody? Yeah, probably, but don't let that deter you from watching this film, because this movie is really good. And I also wanted to bring up, not necessarily a negative, but just a little insight. I've seen a lot of other content creators talk about they think they may enjoy the movie more if they watched it at home. And I kind of have to agree with them. I do feel like this movie feels more like a home video experience because it has that late night TV feeling to it that it would make for a better viewing at home. So make sure you check it out when it comes to Shudder in a couple of months. Shudder's been killing it lately, man. They've stop motion. Now this, I mean, they're tearing it up. I'm very, very happy to see Shudder just having a breakout year. And they got quite a few more movies coming out right later this year. One in particular I'm very excited about, called Inviolate Nature. Go look that trailer up. It looks very interesting. It looks like a spiritual successor to Friday the 13th Part 2. Check it out and watch it, and you'll know exactly what I'm talking about. But Late Night with the Devil perfectly captures the look and aesthetic of the late night talk show scene and culture of the 1970s. And Dave Dismouchin gives the best performance of his career alongside a great cast. When you throw in some good practical effects and a decent story, and you got a pretty enjoyable and unique found footage horror film. Late Night with the Devil gets a 3.75 out of 5 and is Grizzly grade guaranteed. I want to also add that this will be a great addition to a Halloween watch list, since it takes place on Halloween and it has those spooky Halloween feels. So if your theater's still playing this, go give it a watch. If not, wait till it starts streaming on Shudder. That should be out in a couple of months. Either way, check this out. Now let's move on to Immaculate. When a devout nun is sent to Italy to take her vows at a well-renowned monastery, she is suddenly and miraculously with child, but her faith and trust begins to fade as she discovers sinister forces are at work. And that is not even close to what this film is actually offering here. And I am sorry, because I'm not going to be able to talk a lot about it, because if I do, I'm going to spoil this movie for you, and I want people to go see this movie, because it's something else. That's all I can say. And I want to start out by saying, everyone knows that listens to this show knows that I am absolutely sick and tired of religious and possession horror films, because they are literally all the same. You have The Exorcist and The Omen, and then the other 90% of everything after that is just copying them. So it's from the plots to the tropes, nothing ever fucking changes. But there are exceptions, and this is definitely one of them. First off, Sydney Sweeney. Wow. I am man enough to admit that I thought that she was very overhyped, and that she's on the same lines as her co-actor from Euphoria, Zendaya. I thought that she was just going to be another pretty face that's getting roles because she's a gorgeous woman. And then I seen this, and I realized that Zendaya is just out on an island by herself with her acting skills. because Sydney Sweeney absolutely has the fucking talent. She is absolutely fucking phenomenal in this movie. She plays the obedient and faithful servant of God in this film, and then you slowly watch her devotion fade little by little. It's just a sight to see. And there is a scene in this movie at a point where she is going through something very, very traumatic, and her screams in this movie are so freaking real. Like, they don't feel exaggerated or acted out at all. They felt so fucking organic. She has a bright future ahead of her. If she continues to pick good movies, it's particularly horror films, because she definitely has an eye for horror, she's got a very bright future. I'm actually looking forward to seeing how much further she can go with this. And it was good to hear this too. I found out later on after the movie that this film was kind of like a passion project for her. And it's good to see that she liked this concept and this script so much that she kept on pushing and kept on pushing, and then finally this movie got made. And that's really good to hear. I like hearing stories like this. Even if it's a movie that's not my cup of tea, I do like it when someone is very passionate about something and it actually gets made. Moving on. Man, the gore in this movie, there's gore, gore, and gore. I was not expecting any gore in this movie, because religious horror films and possession horror films rarely have a lot of gore in it. Maybe one or two good kills. And I'm not telling you that there is a lot of gore in this movie, but there was way more than I was expecting. And they're simple, but they're super effective, and it doesn't feel forced. It all feels very, very fluid. Like, it doesn't feel like they forced any of the kills in the movie. And the other thing too is they used a lot of practical effects, and those practical effects were solid. They did a good job with that. The plot and the writing was great. I wasn't really sure what this movie was before I was going in. To be perfectly honest with you, I thought that this movie was just going to be an Omen ripoff. From the trailers, it appeared that this movie was going in the route of a nun out of nowhere becomes pregnant and did not have sexual relations, so it was immaculate conception. And here we are doing the same old song and dance where she's carrying the Antichrist. And that's what I expected to be. Same old rinse and repeat religious horror film BS. But it was actually very fucking unique and something that I'd never seen coming in a million years, especially from the plot. And I don't want to spoil this movie, so I really can't tell you anything about the plot. But let's just say that in my entire life, I have never seen the ideas that they used in this film ever used. And I've seen thousands of films, and the majority of them have been horror films. So it was such a breath of fresh air to see something new come in that wasn't just completely dumb. It was such a well thought out plot and idea and concept. And along with those ideas and concepts, just like with most religious horror films, there is a degree of blasphemy and, you know, kind of anti-Christian stuff that goes on in these movies. And sometimes even the message is anti-Christian. I don't believe that's the case here, but when you're scrolling through social media and you see an ad for this movie and it says blasphemous, shocking, blah, blah, they are 100% correct. There's always going to be a degree of blasphemy in a religious horror film. So if you are familiar with that, it's not going to bother you. If you are not familiar with that, it's probably not going to be for you. But if you can separate faith from entertainment, then you should be fine. And you're either going to like the idea like I did and thought it was very unique, or you're going to think it's just completely ridiculous and just crazy. But I felt like it was a very unique idea. The tension and suspense that they build throughout this movie is done very well also. This dark and dreadful atmosphere, like you feel like you're descending into this pit of despair along with the character. Like that's how well this movie's directed and how the tone of this movie is given to the audience, that I felt like I was going through this journey with her, even though I have no idea what it's like to be a woman or anything. It just felt like I was side by side with her the whole time, going through this just dark and awful situation. And it also does something that I really appreciate, which it avoids most of the religious horror tropes. And most of them, there's a couple of ones that they commit, but most of it, it's so far from this rinse and repeat religious horror film. And I know I keep saying that, but y'all just have no idea how much of a breath of fresh air that is. That, because we literally get 30 of these damn movies a year, guys, and they're most of them are not good. So it's just so, I appreciate it so much when they take this concept that's so fucking played out and they do something so unique with it. But they do manage to squeeze in a few unnecessary jump scares. And don't get me wrong, those jump scares were effective, but they just like with most modern jump scares, they just feel completely fucking unnecessary. I mean, oddly enough, in this subgenre of horror, we have franchises that are completely reliant on jump scares. I enjoy the Conjuring movies for what they are, because I know subjectively they're not good movies. Some of them are, most of them ain't. I just enjoy the lore and the connected universe of The Conjuring, but they do rely on jump scares way too much, and they're so cliche and so predictable now that it's just not, they have no effect on me. The Insidious franchise is literally jump scare the franchise. If there wasn't jump scares, Insidious wouldn't even be a thing. So it's definitely something that's so played out. And Immaculate does have a few of those in here. Not necessarily a detriment, just felt unnecessary and forced. The rest of the cast, other than Sydney Sweeney, they're just okay. They're not, none of them are particularly standing out. I'm not saying any of them are bad, because none of them are bad. They're just there, and Sydney Sweeney is soaking up all the spotlight, which she definitely deserves, because her performance is incredible. They're pretty much along for the ride watching her perform. The other thing I wanted to get to is that, and these are kind of, this is also falls into, you're either going to like it or you're not going to like it, and that the movie is a slow burn. It builds tension, but it plays the long game. And if you can't handle the long game, you're not going to like this movie either. And circling back around to the blasphemy part, again, I'm not going to reveal any spoilers because I want people to go see this movie. But the ending of this movie, I still don't know how I feel about it. Because when I genuinely tell you that this movie, the ending of this movie was so shocking and it was so insane that me and the people in the theater sat there for almost 5 minutes, just sitting there watching the credits roll and the lights on, because the lights came on after the credits roll in most movies, unless there's like a mid-credit scene or end-credit scene. And we just sat there, and all of us collectively sat there and tried to process what we had just watched. Because I can tell you right now, that end scene is either going to piss you off, or it's going to shock you and stay with you, or honestly, I don't know. Because I can tell you right now, I find this movie to be, I think it's a good movie, I recognize that it's not for everybody, but that end scene, I don't know if I will ever watch this movie again, just because the end scene is so fucking shocking and so heavy and so deep. I'm never going to forget that end scene. And I'm not overhyping it. It was just, I'm just being honest with you. It did affect me. I'm not saying that that everybody in the crowd was boo-hooing or anything, but everybody in the crowd was sitting there with their jaws dropped because they just couldn't believe that they went there. So, yeah, that scene's going to make or break you, definitely. If everything else in the movie doesn't make or break you, that end scene is going to decide whether you hate it or like it or love it. And I'm in the realm of somewhere in between, and I recognize how good the movie is, but again, I don't know if I'll ever be watching this movie again. It depends. I really have to think about it. But Immaculate does deliver solid writing, great gore, unique ideas, and straight shocking scenes that definitely breathes a much-needed breath of fresh air into a dull and repetitive subgenre. But most of all, it proves that Sydney Sweeney has the talent to not only shine in horror, but in any genre. Immaculate gets a 4 out of 5 and is grisly grade guaranteed. Go to theaters and check this one out, and be prepared. Now, let's get on to some ghost busting with Ghostbusters Frozen Empire. When an ancient artifact unleashes a great evil upon the world, it is up to the Spangler family and the Ghostbusters to save us all. And this movie is getting shit on so damn bad right now. And I'm here to tell you that this movie has some issues, but the garbage that's being flung at this movie is absolutely fucking ridiculous. I, for one, really enjoyed this movie. This movie feels a lot like the real Ghostbusters cartoon for me, and I know that the director said that they took a lot of inspiration from that, and it definitely shows. And that gives it this whimsical feel that the cartoon had and kind of shifts this tone, just like with Ghostbusters Afterlife, to a more family-friendly franchise, which to me is the direction that Ghostbusters needs to go in. Don't get me wrong. I love the first two movies. Those movies are more for like young adults, teenager young adults slash adults. And to me, those old movies were fine being like that, but I do think the new tonal shift going to more of a family-friendly type of entertainment works. As long as they don't make it too incredibly kiddy, that's fine. I don't feel like this movie does that. I think it does a good job of balancing it, whether you could take your kids to it or you and your wife can go see it. I think they did a good job with that. They did a good job of balancing that. I think the ghost designs were great, really cool and super unique. There's this one ghost called the Possessor Ghost, and it looks like a little red streak, and it jumps into inanimate objects, and then it tries to kill you with those inanimate objects. I thought that was really cool. There was this thing that they called the Sewer Snake, which is like this giant ghost eel. I remember something like that being in the TV show. And I remember it being pretty cool there as well. There's a couple other ghosts here and there that are cool. But the big bad Garaka, man, he was cool as shit. Very, very cool villain with a cool backstory and a very cool power set, cool powers. Really good addition to Ghostbusters lore. And I felt like they expanded more on the Ghostbusters arsenal too, like giving us this new tech, like they have a drone trap. I thought that was really cool how they did that. These new concepts with the containment units, where if you have a possessed object, they have a containment unit now that can separate the possessing spirit from that haunted object. I thought that was really cool and unique as well. just all these new unique stuff that they're doing with the Ghostbusters equipment and stuff, like expanding upon that. And I think the cast overall does a really good job. No one in here gives a bad performance per se, but I do feel that some of them were completely unnecessary and are very forced. We got to let the legacy characters go, guys, if they don't serve a purpose in the story. You can bring in Ray, or you can bring Winston in, or you can bring in Vakeman. All that's fine when it pertains to the story and it pushes the story forward. When you just put them in a random scene, it doesn't work. And unfortunately, they do that a lot in this movie. Bill Murray in particular, he was, I love Bill Murray, guys, love him. He was completely unnecessary in this movie. They should have completely cut him out of the movie. It made no sense for him to pop up at any point in that movie. Even when the shit hits the fan and they need all hands on deck, he served no purpose. Annie Potts too, the one that plays Janine, the secretary, she serves no purpose either. They did a really good job of utilizing her in Afterlife, which is why it didn't make any damn sense for them to use her the way they did in this movie. She's just randomly there that serves no purpose. I don't think that those legacy characters, if they are not part of the plot, because Ray and Winston, they somewhat serve a purpose. Winston being he's like this rich businessman now that completely funds the Ghostbusters. He bankrolls their whole operation. And it never goes into detail what his actual business is, but he apparently has endless amounts of money, and he gives them any equipment they want, and he puts money towards research and development for ghost busting. I thought that was really cool and a good way to utilize a legacy character. Ray has a story arc in here that could have been used as a send-off for the character, but it kind of just went nowhere and it was kind of just there, which I'll get to in a minute. Kumail Ali-Nanjiani, he had some good moments. He kind of plays the catalyst character for all of this kicking off and serves somewhat of a purpose throughout the movie. But for the most part, his role and his story just doesn't feel necessary. And it feels, when you see the movie, you'll see exactly what I'm talking about, because his role as the catalyst and his role as helping with the solution to the conflict doesn't feel like it's part of the Ghostbusters universe. It feels like they took one concept that was completely different in every way, shape, or form and just threw it in, and it don't work. Not to me, it didn't. It kind of felt a little lazy. Don't get me wrong, he's got some funny parts in this movie, especially at the end, even though that kind of gets overboard too with the comedy and very high tension moments. But nevertheless, it was funny. But it just kind of goes hand in hand with my next point, which there was too many damn storylines in this movie. Like, you had a storyline with Phoebe, the main character, where she kind of feels isolated, and she kind of feels isolated from her family because she's a minor. She's only 15, and the mayor, played by the same dickhead from the first Ghostbusters movie, the guy that's like, this man has no dick, that guy. His shit was funny. But he's played by he's in there. He, other than being just the asshole on the back end, he didn't serve any purpose as well. But Phoebe is pretty much benched because she is a minor participating in ghostbusting, and they're going to get shut down if they keep using a minor in these dangerous activities. So she had that storyline where she felt like she was alienated from her family. Ray had a storyline where he didn't want to give up the ghostbusting life because he loved it so much and missed it so much. You had the storyline with Kamal Ali Najim that didn't, it was just there. You had essentially two other storylines, and they all didn't feel necessary. I just didn't feel like we needed all that. It makes the movie feel bloated and overstuffed. Finn Wolfhard, his character might as well not even be in the movie. He's just there. In the trailer, when you see him and Slimer have their little interaction, that's the extent of his role in the movie. He's just there. And he's also, and this ain't no offense to the guy, because I'm not a damn actor, and I'll say this forever. When I critique someone's acting, I'm doing that out of pure opinion. But he's just a blah actor. And I know his career is just getting started, but man, a kid needs an acting coach, because he's just not good. Even though they didn't really give him enough to really do anything. And finally, more time is spent building up to the conflict with the villain instead of the time we spent with the villain. They did a wonderful job of building this villain up, telling his backstory, having tension to lead up to this villain, and we only got about 15 minutes with him. And that was disappointing, because he's so fucking cool. Garaka is a cool villain. And I do like that they're introducing these new villains into the Ghostbusters mythos. So I appreciated that, but I just needed more time with him. And finally, probably my biggest gripe, and it's going to sound very petty, but the Stay Puft Marshmallow Man. They're in this movie too, the little mini Stay Puffs, and I get they're there to be funny and to kind of be a mascot for Ghostbusters, but it's like, if you know Ghostbusters lore, which I'm not this diehard expert on Ghostbusters, but I do know that the Stay Puft Marshmallow Man is pretty much tied to Gozer, because the whole point of the Stay Puft Marshmallow Man was that Ray accidentally thought about the Stay Puft Marshmallow Man when Gozer told them to choose the Destroyer. So it's literally tied to Gozer. And as spoiler alert, in Afterlife, they trapped Gozer. So Gozer's not a factor anymore. So it doesn't make sense for the Stay Puft Marshmallow Man to be present here. And he's every fucking where. The little mini Stay Puffs are everywhere. And I get it, they're trying to, I know what they're doing, they're trying to do a mascot thing, and that's fine. But in my opinion, and I'm pretty sure most Ghostbusters fans' opinions, Slimer's always been the mascot. So I don't know this hard turn to turn away from Slimer, but Slimer's always been the mascot. It's weird that they're pushing Stay Puft. I don't really get that. I know that they were in Afterlife too, and I felt like they were kind of overused in that one, even though Gozer was involved. I know in some other forms of media, Stay Puft has been in there. It just doesn't make it doesn't make sense for them to be in this movie, and they were everywhere. They gave them a lot of screen time, and I don't get it. But although it feels overstuffed, underdeveloped, and underutilized, I still feel like Ghostbusters Frozen Empire manages to be a good watch. And that's mainly due to its expansion on the Ghostbusters mythos and universe, its cool concepts, and its great villain, Garaka. So for all that, Ghostbusters Frozen Empire gets a 3.5 out of 5 and is Grizzly grade guaranteed. This movie does not deserve the hate that it's getting right now. IGN gave it like a 4 out of 10. And then literally before recording this episode, I was scrolling through Facebook, and IGN gave Winnie the Pooh Blood and Honey 2 a 6 out of 10. So come on, guys. I haven't seen Blood and Honey 2, but I know damn well it's not better than the latest Ghostbusters movie. There's no way it's better than the latest Ghostbusters movie. It's impossible. Or could it be? I still think this movie's getting a lot of hate for no reason. So go check this out. If you got kids, definitely take them to it. They will have a good time. If you and your wife just want to go watch a nice, laid-back, family-friendly movie, go check out Ghostbusters Frozen Empire. I enjoyed it, and it's definitely getting unjustified hate right now. And that does it for another episode. Make sure you click the links in the description and subscribe to the show wherever you listen to podcasts. And also follow the YouTube channel so you don't miss any of the content I'm bringing your way. Also, make sure you check out Carl Casey at White Bat Audio. He is a synthwave master, and his music is being used throughout each episode. So check him out on Apple Music, Spotify, and YouTube. Sorry that it took a little while for this episode to drop, guys. It was supposed to come out Monday. Then life got in the way. So the other drop that I was going to have today, that's also been pushed. So stay tuned for that. It's going to drop pretty soon on the YouTube channel. And speaking of the YouTube channel, please go and subscribe to my YouTube channel. If you follow this show, please subscribe to the YouTube channel as well. Trying to grow that platform too. And I'm going to start bringing a lot more stuff there. I've been bringing, audio versions of this show there, and I've also started Mean Joe's Monster Manual, and I plan on starting even more stuff. So go ahead and subscribe to that so you don't miss that. The next podcast episode is going to be one of my most anticipated movies of the year, Godzilla X Kong: The New Empire, and I cannot wait. That episode's probably going to drop Monday, so make sure you go see the movie in theaters and support it, because we are in the golden age of kaiju cinema. Please support this movie, guys, and come back here to the Grizzly Cave on Monday to hear my thoughts. And until next time, remember, I'm Joe Grizzly, bitch.